G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 8A.
Now, we are considering under B2 really how the holistic concept of science fits with criteria that Mrs. Eddy used for her concept of science. And so we go on and now check on each one of those criteria if Mrs. Eddy uses a holistic concept. Now, the very first point here is now the elements. Every subject is built up of elements, constitutes of elements. And Mrs. Eddy's elements are, as we know, ideas. These are constitute being, and therefore we must see, are these ideas as the building blocks of reality or of being, are they really holistic? Now we know that that is so, and perhaps it's good to realize that, because we have taken it for granted that ideas are always ideas of mind, capital M, because our definition of idea is that it is an image in mind, in the divine mind. So we can see that these ideas are parts of a whole, that they are not isolated parts, but parts that reflect always the whole. They always reflect a synonymous term. Mind stands for God, and God is the compound term for the one and only reality. So Mrs. Eddy makes a very clear distinction that it says that only ideas are actually scientific, because only ideas come from the whole, so that we must conclude from that everything which is not of the nature of ideas is unscientific. Ooh, this is a statement, huh? Thinking about what is going on in the world of the sciences, they are not dealing with ideas, not with divine ideas. They are dealing with concepts, with human concepts, with material concepts, and not with divine ideas. Therefore, we must see, no matter if we like it or not, that the old science is unscientific. So, again, we can see how big the concept is that we go out from a holistic sense. She therefore would show what ideas are and would show, and perhaps we have just taken that as a nice teaching, that she said, well, ideas is that which we can trace back to God. Illusions are that which we cannot trace back to God. So she makes a differentiation between ideas and illusions. Well, the other sciences also make a differentiation between facts and illusions, but we can see that that is not the right basis. We must make a differentiation illusions versus ideas. These are the counterparts, and see, therefore, because ideas are that which come from God, that every other concept that does not come from God must be unscientific and therefore must be illusive, must be an illusion. So that the whole realm of physical and natural science, and afterwards all the other life sciences that are building on different building blocks than ideas, are just an investigation into illusions. This is very hard to say when we think how there are millions of earnest so-called scientists that are working all their life devotedly to find out about reality and to say now, and that's why I don't say it on the TV, and not on the radio, because they would crucify me for it, but Mrs. Eddy said it, and they nearly crucified her mentally, that actually everything is elusive, that is not based on divine ideas. That only ideas are real, everything else is unreal, untrue. These are very big questions. And I think it is nice if one stands in awe before these facts. I will repeat that awe over again and over again, because this makes a scientist. If we can no more stand in awe before our subject, before our textbook, then I think it would be better to close it and to devote our lives to something else. Because, as I said, to stand in awe before the object of our investigation is really the necessary attitude, which is that ground, that fertile ground, into which an idea, a new idea, an inspiration, a revelation can take hold and can take root and can begin to grow. So let's culture that consciousness of being in constant wonderment of the bigness and greatness of the discovery. So that was the reason why we were beginning to study the synonymous terms in the textbook, because we studied them for the one and only purpose to find out what are the ideas of God. What are the ideas that characterize mind, that characterize spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love? Because we wanted to find out, first of all, what are the true elements of God that constitute reality. If we go out from that point and see that that is the only true scientific method to investigate first the elements of being, then after that, we can see that these ideas are our elements with which we begin to work. And therefore, ideas are for us very exact, very tangible, spiritually tangible. They are unchangeable. They have the nature of being definite, of being absolute, of being eternal and complete, so that we have really elements with which we can calculate, with which we can compute, with which we can work. And this is something that the old science would have never accepted. I remember so well in the pre-war times when John Dolly was presenting the synonymous terms and their ideas, how much at that time the general thought naturally rejected the fact that ideas are scientific elements, that you cannot build up science with ideas, because for the general consciousness, ideas were flimsy, intangible, indefinite, inexact, because they wouldn't know what ideas are. So it is understandable that for their point of view, ideas are not scientific and cannot be basic elements. But when we use the right method, then from and deduce from the synonymous terms, the ideas of being, then we can see that these ideas are scientific. Why should matter? I can recall how Dolly would constantly come back to it and say, why do the natural scientists say, well, matter is a scientific element? When it is being brought out even at that time that matter as such does not exist. And why do they say that ideas are not scientific? And he would say, well, ideas are the most scientific thing on earth. They are the most scientific element that we can think of at the present moment. So we must see that ideas are not just our concept of something, but they are actually the image in mind, that what the divine mind knows about itself. And that is divine, and that is scientific. So ideas lend themselves to a calculus of ideas, So that finally, Mrs. Eddy could speak that thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. Now, when she writes that, she doesn't just give a nice phraseology which makes her think to be a very high scientist, but doesn't know about what she's talking about. That is the general concept in the movement, that what is the divine infinite calculus movement. And I remember at that time very clearly that the teacher in the movement at that time, who was the most prominent teacher and lecturer at that time, that when he was asked, what does Mrs. Eddy mean about the divine infinite calculus, he replied to the student, well, that's just the way that Mrs. Eddy put it there. Bam. Well, we have to see that we are treading on a completely new ground, and that this new ground is not accessible to every human way of thinking, that it is something new, and that it takes for us and for everybody quite a struggle, or quite an effort, I would say, quite a devotion to change our consciousness, to begin to restructure our consciousness. And the very first thing is that we know what ideas are. In addition to that, you have studied that little pamphlet of mine called Science versus Metaphysics, or something like that. I don't even know my titles to my books anymore. Metaphysics and Science, thank you. Yeah, something like that. Huh? In which I was bringing out that very deep concept that thinking about ideas is not science. Science is when the infinite is conscious of itself as ideas. That's science. That's the difference between metaphysics and science. That metaphysics, as John Dolly already brought it out now nearly 40 years ago, that he said metaphysics is the contemplation of ideas, whereas science is the contemplation of the infinite one, including its own ideas. So can you see the very, very great difference? If we are thinking about idea, it is our thought, thinking ideas. But Mrs. Eddy defines ideas not as that which we think about, but ideas are that which the divine mind knows. The divine mind knowing itself and knowing itself as infinite ideas. So if we want to be a scientist and not just an ordinary metaphysician, we jolly well have to train our consciousness away from that ordinary concept of metaphysics that is constantly engaged in thinking right, having the right thought, holding on to the right thought, give me a right thought, think about me at this and this time when I go to exam or before the church or so, think about me. It's all thinking about ideas. But that's not the definition of ideas. Isn't it so? It's absolutely so. She never says that ideas is that what we are thinking about. But that's how we take it. It's the most curious phenomena that one can see over thousands of years, that inspired books have always been read wrongly, without noticing it. So that we read the textbook and are contemplating the textbook and think that we are contemplating it the way the text says it, but we do the very opposite. just like that eternal thinking and thinking and thinking about ideas. This is not science. And that makes real big difference. I nearly said a hell of a difference, but I was hesitating for a moment. Because you can see in practice what a great difference that will make. That if we are contemplating and dealing with a problem through thinking, or if we are dealing with it through the mind of Christ, the mind, capital M, through God's knowledge of Himself, God's consciousness of Himself, God knowing the answer, not we knowing the answer. God knowing the truth, not we knowing the answer and the true answer. So it demands a complete overturning of our standpoint. And again, we see that the holistic science is really demanding a great paradigm shift in our structure of consciousness. Okay, now we have the elements. The elements that are holistic. Now let's go to the next one. We have seen that elements, or these infinite ideas, are so infinite that they are numberless, that we cannot really fathom them and understand them unless we are able to reduce them to simplicity. That means to reduce them in the first step to categories of ideas. So that instead of having some thousand ideas, we can reduce them to just seven categories of ideas. The categories of the ideas of the seven synonymous terms. If we wouldn't do that, if we would stay where the ordinary reader of the textbook is, that he reads the textbook and he has a lot of terms on every page, and somehow he knows those terms, so he has a wilderness of terms that he is reading. They are, in the first go, in no way ordered, classified, or categorized, or systematized. He just reads a lot of terms, a lot of values, either positive values, negative values, but without any category. It is like a swarm of gnats. There are a lot of gnats, but you don't see any order in it. It is a randomness, a great disorder, a randomness, a wilderness, and you don't find your way in it. You don't see clear what is really happening. And this is what the Bible would call the land of Nod. And Cain was expelled into the land of Nod. That Nod was restlessness, wilderness, randomness, no order. So the Christian scientist who does not know the categories of being, he jolly well has to rely on his guesswork. He has to guess which idea he may take for a certain situation, and it's all guesswork, which is belief, which is not understanding. If he is face to face to any situation, who tells him what the right ideas about that situation is, how he should approach it? He doesn't know, because he can take out of some thousand ideas, it can take out at random the one or the other, which he feels may be the right thing. But it's still what he feels to be the right thing. That's not science either. Ideas are ideas of God, and therefore we must work from God, from the synonymous term, and so we can see that we bring in really order, or must bring in first order, by categorizing all these many ideas. Else we are. We have to memorize ideas. They are, and our memory is limited. It can't take in all the ideas. We soon find all the limitations and the inexactness and the insufficiency of our mental approach. So this is the way that the Christian Science textbook has been used as long as one hasn't seen categories. It's therefore an antediluvian concept of science that has been used, not a really scientific concept of science. It's a guesswork concept of science that is still used. Who on earth reads the textbook in order and sees the categories of being in the textbook? So still that is the general way of reading a science and reading it in a most unscientific way. So we must see that a science demands categories. Now, we have talked about categories and we have seen that categories have, so to say, two great values. The one value is to reduce really the infinite to simplicity. If we can do that, then we have a better overall view. Then we have only a few instead of numberless elements. We have a few that we can overview, that we can get hold of. And the second advantage is that if we can categorize the numberless ideas in a few categories, we can really differentiate categories. Then we can, for the first time, build the differentiation which is the basis for order. Only then we can order things. Before we don't have categories, all those thousands of ideas with which we have to deal with are not ordered. They are randomness. And what is not ordered cannot be understood. In order to order something, you have to differentiate. And through differentiation, we can build orders. We know that. And so order brings understanding. So the purpose of building categories is actually to give a help for understanding the subject. So these categories are not here for some academic exercise. They are here for a very tangible and very practical reason, namely, to understand the subject. How can I explain that? I thought, how on earth can I explain? It's so simple, but the simple things are always difficult to explain because the human mind is too complicated to grasp something simple. For instance, most of you who are sitting here have been at the summer school on the chapter on prayer or have read the chapter on prayer in its structural way, and so on. Now, let's say we don't know anything about the structure of the chapter on prayer, so that we are way back where we were at the beginning, where we thought that we can get hold of a subject by reading it. Now, I thought, what can I do? So I took the second page of prayer, the whole page, and read it quickly through, and made a list of the values or ideas that appear there. And there are about 24 ideas that appear. And now, what can we do with these ideas? I quickly read them down, and you see that it is a wilderness of ideas. She speaks about desire, about trust, exalting motives, enlightening, benefiting, good, wisdom, unchanging, humbleness, fervent, knowing, being, harmony, saving, growth, intelligence, inform, perfection, accepting, source, blessedness, existence, right, advising. What kind of a story can you make out of it? Can it make sense? It can't make sense. These are isolated elements of a text. And you know that when we did take the chapter on prayer, and we could actually classify or categorize these ideas, that then suddenly we began to see a very simple structure in that first subject on prayer, the prayer of mind, with its seven subtones. And suddenly we had the same terms, but we could categorize them in the seven and the seven subtones, and suddenly we had a clear-cut presentation of an attitude that we could call the prayer of mind in its many ramifications, but very orderly. You see what I mean, that why we need categories. Without categories, we have no possibility of understanding a subject. So we should be well aware of the bigness of what has been achieved by seeing what are the categories of being in the textbook.